Rolando, please, come. I'm excited to do the Remakes, Reboots, Revivals episode with you, discovering the Dark Crystal.
You're creeping me out, Nicole.
Please?
That's so good.
It is a good impression of the one and only Chamberlain.
Please? I would love to be in Chamberlain character all episode, if that's cool with you guys.
No, let's not do that.
Well, as Chamberlain said, we're talking about the Dark Crystal today on Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast?
About unoriginality.
Let's go.
I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And joining us today is our producer who keeps us in check, Eddie Z.
Hey, guys.
And Bobby. Say hi, Bobby.
He's just wagging his tail.
He's wagging. That's his way of saying hi. He's a dog.
Dark Crystal, Jim Henson.
Dark Crystal, Jim Henson. Today. Yeah, did you know it was Jim Henson? Like, before you started watching it?
Yeah. It's puppets.
Did you grow up with this?
The Dark Crystal?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't. It's not like a pleasant memory.
Explain.
So, the Dark Crystal was, they used to, every time I went to the doctor, the Dark Crystal would always be playing for some reason, or Labyrinth, or The Secret of Nim. One of these three movies would usually be on the TV playing anytime I was in the waiting room for a doctor. So, as a result, I tend to always have like this weird, queasy, I'm getting sick feeling anytime I'm watching these movies.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, even rewatching The Dark Crystal now.
Like the sense of anxiety.
Yes, a little bit.
Oh, no. That's too bad.
On top of that, to make matters worse, also, the movie is genuinely frightening.
Yes. I mean, it's well done in that sense where it's like, this is fucking creepy. This doesn't look stupid. It looks convincing, and I'm creeped out.
Is that a good thing for a children's movie?
Well, that's up for, you know, debate. Are you a Jim Henson fan?
Not really.
Are you, Eddie Z?
Yes, I am.
I'm a massive Jim Henson fan. I'm just putting that out there. So you're going to hear some hardcore bias today.
So what makes a hardcore Jim Henson fan? Like, I understand the Muppets and I understand their appeal, but like, what else has he done? What else has he done outside of Sesame Street?
The Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, he did.
Oh, he did do Labyrinth.
Yes, he did other pieces.
Boo.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band. He's just, but that's the thing. Like, the Muppets aren't just like a movie television personality. You know, they make music. They have, like, there's a theme park about it. They're kind of like Disney, and that's why Disney bought them, in the sense where they kind of transcend all mediums, and they're very flexible. And it's also not just about like these personalities that he brings to life, but about the relationships you build with them the more time you spent with them, which is why people like Kermit so much. Kermit's kind of like this Mickey Mouse figure.
Ugh, he wishes.
Excuse me.
He wishes.
First of all, Mickey Mouse's whole, I don't even know what his like agenda is or what he's trying to preach to people, but like, it's something about like dreams and like, hold on tight to your dreams. Ha ha. But like, I love Kermit because Kermit's like, hey, you're awesome for who you are. And even though you might feel like an outcast,
I actually don't know if
you're
this
green
is...
and that's fine. It's beautiful.
What? How is that Kermit?
It's not
shtick?
Easy being green. That's his theme song.
But what?
And that's what the Muppets are all about. Sing a song, sing out loud, sing it strong. It's all about accepting who you are and being okay with yourself. I can literally sit here and quote thousands of songs that
have
this message.
You're going to have to do that next time the Muppets come out on Disney Plus.
Yeah, which we will certainly cover. The Muppets are life. Okay, bro?
All right.
But The Dark Crystal is a little different because it's a one-off, one film that Jim Henson made in his lifetime.
Yes.
That he came up with and is very much his own. It was actually his passion project. But it's very different from The Muppets, even though the film, unlike Labyrinth and unlike any Muppet movie, really, is that there's no humans. It's just all puppets in general. Like everything. You don't see a human being at all in The Dark Crystal. So it's very unique for its time.
Technically, you do see people dress up as Gelfling for like the wide shots.
Technically, yeah. People in costumes, yeah.
People are in costumes.
But so I'm going to dial it back and we'll give some history now, okay?
Give me the history of The Dark Crystal.
Well, let's set the scene. It's December 1982. You're at the movie theater and you're debating what it is you want to see. That new Burt Reynolds Goldie Hawn movie, Best Friends, just came out, but you're looking for something a little bit more kid-friendly, and Tootsie has been sold out in all the movie theaters. And you could see E.T. again, but it's been in theaters for months now.
It was still coming out of the box.
It was still, yeah, it was the highest grossing film of 1982. So you take your chance on a film that you haven't heard much about, but it's got Jim Henson's name on it, and you watch The Dark Crystal.
I did want to preface this. Not many people took a chance on this
movie. Not many people. When it debuted at number 5, but it actually got up to number 3. I mean, obviously, it didn't do well. It wasn't marketed well at all. The studio heads didn't really know what to do with it. But people responded to it, and it since gained a cult following enough for us to be talking about it because of a Netflix revival. So, Jim Henson, known for Sesame Street, Ralph the Dog, and his Muppet Workshop Labs, where they created people like Yoda and Empire Strikes Back, he decided to fund his own, well, okay, he didn't really fund his own movie. He made a movie at a studio, right? But then that studio with Lou Grade, I forget the name of the studio. If you can get me on that, Eddie, that'd be great.
Frank Oz.
No, that's his partner.
Oh. Sexual partner?
No. Creative partner. Gay. No, he wasn't
gay. I don't know much about Jim Henson.
He wasn't gay. He had 4 children, in fact.
Oh.
Married to his wife, Jane. So Lou Grade helped him make this film, you know, and right when The Dark Crystal was done and it got tested in front of audiences and it did not do well, the studio heads went through changes, and the studio heads looked at it and they're like, what the fuck is this? So they didn't market it very well. Of course, they're likely to look at it and be like,
if you're looking at the movie, even now I'm looking at the movie like, what the fuck
like,
is
what?
This?
Huh? Yeah, it is a bit bizarre. But he actually was like, they gave him all the stipulations and they didn't market it well. So he's like, you know what, guys? I said, I'm going to put this money out there with my own money. And he funded the release of the film all on his own.
Oh, did he?
He did. He believed in the film very much. So he came up with this idea of this world and all of its characters while he was like in a hotel room, you know, one day, just like kind of snowed in.
He got snowed in Newark, I think, right?
That I don't know where
exactly. I actually think it was
exactly.
Either Newark or JFK. It was in the New York City metro area.
Well, that's awesome.
And he was with his daughter.
Aww.
Who actually would be, I don't know, actually, I should take that back. I don't know if he has more than one daughter.
He does, he has 2.
Okay, Lisa. So I don't know which daughter. I don't know if it's the daughter who would carry on his legacy in the Netflix survival or the other one. But it was one of them.
One of them.
50-50 chance, coin flip. Okay. If you're listening, Miss Henson, you can let us know if it was you.
He actually has 5 kids.
His
5 kids?
3 daughters.
Christians. Lisa.
Am I right?
Is one of them Cheryl?
Lisa, Cheryl, and Heather.
I guess not Christians. Just Catholics.
And
sorry.
Then John and Brian.
And John and Brian. Brian being the most prolific one who's really carried on his legacy.
Really?
Yeah, he directed a Muppet Christmas Carol and a Muppet Treasure Island.
Oh, so like his children became like the puppet masters after he passed away.
Some of them did, yeah. Mm. More so some than others, like Brian and Lisa. But I digress. He came up with this. It took him years to kind of like make sense of it in his head. And then he finally was able to go into production with it. He hired a screenwriter, David O'Dell. He got his creative partner, Frank Oz, who helps him with everything. I mean, Frank Oz does the voice of Fozzie, Miss Piggy, Animal. And they embarked on this project.
That's him?
Yeah, that's Frank Oz, who did Yoda and then went on to become a filmmaker of his own.
Yeah, I keep hearing
fame.
Frank Oz.
Yeah.
What the hell? Like, what do I know Frank Oz from?
Other than what I just said, you ever see Little Shop of Horrors?
Oh, yes.
He did that.
Okay.
He directed Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, so we talked about him before on this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, listen to Half the Hate, guys.
Okay. Yeah, listen to that Half the Hate episode. Thank you. Yeah. The Dirty Rotten Scoundrels episode.
Yeah. Mm. It's a good one. He came up, he has a conceptual designer, Brian Frode, and his wife, Wendy, and they helped him come up with all of these creatures of this world. So we have Gelflings, we have Podlings, we have the Skeksis, and the Mystics.
And the Mystics.
And even the little things like the Fizzgigs and stuff. And the Urks. Yes. Urskex, well,
which is the ending.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, guys, from a movie from the 1980s.
Yeah, I mean, the design of this film is absolutely incredible, from the puppets to the sets to the costumes. I mean, it was just like, it's actually, that's the one thing that you're like, this movie's fucking weird as hell. But if you look at it, you're just like, but wow, so much was put into this. So much creative design was put into this. So on every level. Even the music is great by Trevor Jones. It's like,
oh, the music is phenomenal. Like, yeah. Watching the movie, rewatching the movie, I just rewatched it 2 nights ago.
Yeah.
And or I guess 2 mornings ago because I started in the morning. The soundtrack was crazy good.
Yeah. So like symphonic and wonderful.
Dark Crystal takes place on Thra, and the Skeksis are the watchers of the Dark Crystal. There are these little elf-like things called Gelfling.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one left, apparently. His name is...
Jen.
Jen, thank you. And Jen is sent on a quest by a dying mystic to go put the shard of the... He has to find the shard of the crystal and then put the shard back into the Dark Crystal so that way, or the world's going to end or something.
Yeah.
On his journey, he ends up
finding... Yeah, the meaning of the three suns, because it's on a planet with
three convergence suns, or something.
Yeah.
Okay. And on his way, he ends up finding out he's not the only
Gelfling.
Gelfling, right? Instead, there's also Kira,
mm-hmm.
who... My oh my, it's a female one, so I guess Gelfling are going to repopulate the Earth. Or I guess Thra.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they make it to the castle where they fulfill the prophecy of Gelfling bringing down the Skeksis.
Spoiler alert!
And I think the other main part of the story is that the Skeksis and the mystics are one, and they become the Ursaks,
yeah.
who accidentally came to Thra because of the Dark Crystal and the first convergence. It gets a little complicated.
It's a little wonky.
Hour and a half. Somehow they try to cram all the story in there. And
yeah.
Critics were not a fan of this movie.
Yeah,
I think rightfully so.
The movie, I will say, is that it's very concerned with pushing the plot forward. So like almost every scene is just like information. And then it's like, all right, now let's on to the next one. You know, this is our arc. This is our act one, act two, act three.
Oh, yeah.
And hitting those points.
Yeah, yeah. No, act one is most certainly a... I mean, the first like 10 minutes are just
heavy pure narration. Exposition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is there's so much to it that, you know, it's like you feel like, OK, this movie is super short. And there's and even though it's really simple, this kid just has to redeem the dark crystal, it's like really complicated. And you kind of feel like you miss a couple of things when you watch it. When I first watched this movie was when I was like in my early 20s and I was high off my ass and I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
You're so lucky. I saw this. Like I said, I was under 10 years old.
Yeah,
because I was living in the Bronx.
Really messed you up. I'm so sorry.
That didn't really mess me up. It was just such a horrific looking movie. I mean, there's a part where the Skeksis strip down the Chamberlain.
Yes, yes.
I was like, what the fuck is that?
And he looks so bizarre. Yeah, watching that now, I'm like, oh my god.
Like, this is not a kids movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And you know, a lot of people when they went to go see this movie, they thought it was going to be more like the Muppets, what they're used to. And they did not get that. And I think that's also why the movie didn't do that good. Cause people were like, what did I just watch? And they weren't like telling their friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets kind of confusing because there's you don't really know like why they're there. The Skeksis or how they got there or how they got like those things, like at the end, why they leave.
Uh-huh.
You don't really know who Agra is.
It's true. There's not much on Agra. She's just like this. Another person in a costume.
Yeah. So it's just like, who is she and why is she so important? Just because she throws a bunch of shards at Jen and he has to figure out which one is the right one.
You want Gelfling? Why not ask me? No. Easier to send your crab-brained soldiers. Burn my home. Now, home gone. Gelfling gone. Nothing but Agra. Moldy mildew, mother of mouth muck. Dangle and strangle to death.
Oh, well.
Right, and it's just like, okay, cool. This is a cool adventure you're on, Jen.
Yeah.
Just like, you get thrown these crystals, and for some reason, a flute is what solves the puzzle.
Yes.
Also, I just want to complain one more time. What was up with that naked Gelfling, like, at the beginning of the movie?
What naked Gelfling?
Jen. He's, like, just naked, playing his harp by the river. It's like, what the...
Oh, you've never done that?
No.
Was it a flute or a harp?
What? A flute. I'm sorry. You're right. A flute.
It was a flute.
He's playing his pan flute. Just naked by the river, just like, what is this?
Well, I mean, you know,
Jim Henson, get it together. This is a kid's movie.
Only Gelfling left,
I don't want to see like whore Gelfling just like hanging out on rivers.
I thought you would be more supportive. He seems like so non like gender binary. His name is Jen. You know, who knows? He like kind of sounds like a boy, but he could very well be a girl.
Oh, that's a true boy. Why do I assume he's a boy?
Yeah, I mean, Kira and him don't fall in love. Spoiler alert, Kira fucking dies.
Kira dies, but then comes back to life.
She kind of does, but you never see her wake up and be like, oh my God, Jen, I'm back.
It's implied they're going to fuck implied. And they're going to procreate.
It's implied they're that the new their Adam world and is Eve. Saved, kind of.
Or they could be Steve and Steve. We don't know what Jen is. No, that's not true. No.
We know he's a boy. How Delphine reproduced.
We know he's a girl.
We know because only girls can fly.
They have wings.
Only
the female Delphines have wings. That's why he asks, how come I don't have wings? And she says, you're a boy.
True, they do say that in the movie, but he could have been a what's that word, neutered girl.
you mean his wings might have been clipped?
Yeah,
I suppose
the mystics were like, let's clip her, so she never knows.
Wings get clipped all the time and throb. Apparently.
Or she could have had surgery. Who knows? Okay, keep an open mind. It's actually going back and watching it from after watching the Netflix special. I was just kind of like, there's a lot of information kind of missing. And it actually moves at a rather, for an hour and a half, the scenes kind of move at a slow pace, which is also really interesting.
Yeah, the movie can be boring at times.
Yeah, it kind of takes its time.
Horrific and boring. Man, what a combination, right?
I mean, and watching it not high and a lot older, it had a better impact on me than when I first watched it.
Oh, I gotta tell you, watching it as an adult, after, mind you, the Netflix show, right? I'm still watching it. I'm just like, God, this movie... I didn't like it as a kid growing up because it was just a weird movie.
Yes.
Now as an adult, I don't like it because it's such a slow-paced, boring, horrific movie.
I don't mind slow-paced films. I actually sometimes find really fast-paced films quite boring because it's just so generic and it's like, ugh.
Genuinely, I would agree with you. Yeah. But I think the pacing problem is because it's so slow and like kind of... So, all right. So this story follows the monolithic arc.
Yes.
Right? Basically. It's a hero's tale. Mm-hmm. He gets a quest. He gets impeded by the Gothram, which are like these other horrific creatures that are like half spider, half lobster.
Yes.
All tall man, so that's the monolithic quest, right? He goes on the quest. And I know one of the main reasons the critics did not like this movie was because they felt it was very derivative of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings stories, not movies. Of course, keep in mind, this is before that paradigm would be used over and over and over again by Hollywood.
Yes.
Right now, because now we are in this age, not of resistance, but of the same story told over and over again.
True.
I guess you could argue maybe it was ahead of its time.
It could be. Put yourself in the shoes of the early 80s. Like, early 80s was obsessed with, you know, sword and sandal movies, kind of like how the late 2000s were obsessed with vampire movies. So, like,
who?
Vampire movies? The late 2000s?
There was only Twilight. What are the vampire movies?
A True Blood. The Vampire Diaries. But vampires in general. People were just, like, all about vampires. They were kind of everywhere.
It was very pop
culture. In the early 80s, there was just, like, Castle, you know, King Arthur kind of, like, vibey feeling.
Were there?
Things. Yeah, there were. Oh, Excalibur was out. Conan and the Barbarian. Just, like, all these things that came out that people were, like, all about.
Lady Hawk.
Even in like TV and like the cartoons. So, you know, you have Dark Crystal coming from that. You have Dark Crystal coming from the fact that, you know, Yoda was made for Star Wars and the success of Star Wars. Star Trek coming back. So like fantasy and science fiction in this way was making this comeback.
Yes, fantasy and science fiction are usually one genre booked together.
No.
And they're lumped together usually by bookstores and like. Even film genres clump them together.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy, sci-fi, despite the fact how different they are.
Yeah. I mean, America was not the nerd culture that it is today.
Geek culture.
It's also nerd culture. Hello, The Nerdist is a fucking website.
Yeah, that's just misappropriation.
Are you offended by the term nerd?
No. I just want to apologize for Rolando's...
No, I stand by this comment. The term geek is... Because nerd implies you're smart. Geek does not. Because I feel like there's a lot of stupid people who consume the media that is produced that is aimed for geeks.
Okay, I see your point.
Yeah.
But I think that that also might be a personal definition.
No, it's not.
Look it up on Urban Dictionary. The Simpsons also talk about it.
I think Milhouse, they called him a nerd. He's like, I'm not a nerd. I'm not smart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not the geek culture that it is today.
Geek, I will stand by.
Yeah, because also, you know, people didn't have access to the things that we have now. And like comic books were... comic book movies weren't even a fucking thing then, you know?
No, they were not. I mean, so, what movie, what year was this?
1982. Superman was still out, Like, I think the second or third one was coming out. The second,
really?
The second Star Trek film. Wait, what year did
Superman come out?
78, the first one.
Shut up. Mm-hmm. I thought it was in the 80s.
So 1982, Star Trek Wrath of Khan came out.
Okay.
E.T. came out.
Star Trek.
Yeah, sure. Blade Runner came out, which was also not the biggest hit.
Who?
Blade Runner.
Oh, Blade Runner.
Sorry. The next year, though, they end the Star Wars trilogy. So these were the type of Labyrinth came out in 1981.
Yeah.
So these were the kind of like, this was as geeky as it was going to get, you know, but there wasn't this mass audience for it before. So also, I think the Dark Crystal just also didn't have, it came out at the wrong time. In a way, it was ahead of its time. Mm. Like Jim Henson, had he been alive, could have probably been able to produce this film and direct this film later in his life and had more of an audience for it. Mm. Because also it's highly ambitious for him to do something like, he didn't have animation, he was a puppeteer. So he, of course, he's going to go this way, but he didn't have animation or CGI to think of ways to tell this story.
Disagree. Rewatching it, there was animation in it. They used it to animate like certain effects.
They used visual effects. Yes, they used in-camera effects.
No. They're like literal animations. Like they animate birds and bats and stuff.
Incredibly little visual effects.
I'm just saying, it was still
commonplace in the early 80s, but not really. But at the end of the day, like this was the way that he had to tell such an ambitious story, and that's what this film is. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, it simply is highly ambitious.
It is ambitious.
Yeah.
I think it could have benefited from either being an extra half hour long.
Yes.
And like kind of filling in some of these like crazy gaps that I had to like assume.
Yes.
Or if it's going to keep the same length, like kind of speed up the story a little. Yeah. Like, did I need to see the Chamberlain being stripped down and seeing like his six titties? Because that's like what they were. They were like six like udders.
It was really weird.
Like, yeah. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird traumatizing stuff that happens in this first film with the dissolving of the Emperor right before your eyes too. And just like watching the whole podling race get essentially wiped out by a Gartham. And then having the essence stolen from the poor innocent podling that we barely have a relationship with, but you just feel bad for them because they're fashioned after potatoes.
Oh, the podlings. They were like the Ewoks. Like they were,
and that's the thing too. I could very well see the that George Lucas and stuff was like, this is what we're doing in Return of the Jedi. Bam, I know what we're doing. It's saved by the fucking podlings, aka the Ewoks. That's how the world is saved. So I don't know. Like, also I saw a lot of influence from Star Trek. Like I thought that dream fasting was very much a Star Trek thing.
First thing I remember. It's fire. It's a war, I think. A tree. My mother puts me right inside, and we're...
First thing I remember is the kind one. He picks me up, and he's big. He makes the monsters disappear, and I be safe.
Oh, that's right. I forgot Dreamfast was also introduced. Was also introduced in this one. I mean, obviously, the effects were whack as hell.
It's a very interesting way of doing a flashback, or just, like, telling a story, but I like the approach.
I think that's my beef with it. It's just, like, because I hate... when I was a script reader, I always hated flashbacks.
Yeah.
It's such a crutch sometimes used by storytellers.
But it needed it. And it was nice to see that moment happened.
Okay.
Between the two of them, understanding each other more.
Yeah, it's also very ingenious way of them bonding.
Yes.
And by sharing their stories, like
yes,
that
yes,
too. And yeah. As you know,
and adding to the lore of Gelfling,
and it's something specific to the Gelflings, yes. As we learn later on, that they needed each other to be able to activate this ability that they had.
Yes.
Now I'm remembering the scene very vividly, right? Where they're just like, they like kind of touch hands and then it's just like, they're kind of narrating each other's memories somehow. Somewhere.
Yeah.
You see kind of small cuts of it, like what they see. Mm-hmm. It's just like, so like if you and I held hands, it's just like, I'm crying at work. Yeah. I'm in the bathroom.
Mom won't let me buy the new Nintendo 64.
I have to walk the dog. You know? Okay, yeah, now I remember that scene.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was really nice too because, yeah, like they're so starved for it and for each other that the moment they touch, they can't help but like experience this moment together.
And
which
fall
is
in
sweet.
Love. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. I really wish Jen was transgender now or trans Gelfling. But oh well. Jen. But yeah, so really short film. It was tight, you know, it needed expanding upon, kind of confusing, kind of. dense.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, back then people loved their 90-minute films because a 90-minute film could be syndicated. Syndication was an important part of the film economy in the 1980s even early 90s. You know.
Yeah. No, this is true. Yeah. Very different world.
That's my smart comment of the day. You get so few of them, guys.
Yeah. Also, by the way, so because Jim Henson also knew that there was like a lot to his story, he had two things done. He had a tie-in novelization written by a man named A.C.H. Smith, which was important for kind of not only, it wasn't just like the film on, in a book. It kind of expanded on certain scenes and stuff.
It expanded on Thra, because I don't even think they said the word Thra at all.
They didn't say Thra. Yeah.
They didn't, right?
They didn't. No,
Thra never comes up.
No. So, but there was another book called The World of the Dark Crystal by J.J. Llewellyn and illustrations by Brian Froud with, you know, like pretty much supervision by Jim Henson. And it completely expands upon Thra. It names it Thra. It gives the background for the Gelfling and it tells the origin story of who Agra is and why she's important.
Oh, interesting. What year
so
was
it
that?
Sets up all these things. It was the same year. It came out in the early 80s with these things.
I read that.
You read you it?
Yeah, because I was fascinated with the Dark Crystal when I first saw it. And it was like...
Nerd.
I really wanted to like...
Geek.
No, Eddie's kind of nerdy.
I really wanted to like delve into this whole like, what were the Gelflings?
Mm-hmm.
Who were they?
Yeah.
You know, what were their culture was like?
Yeah.
The Dark Crystal was my first understanding of what genocide was.
Oh, wow.
I never kind of like... saw that or like saw anything that would be like, hey, we wiped out a whole people.
Yeah.
You know, and then this deep where they're like the last. So that was interesting. Like I remember like thinking, oh my God, like what were they like? I can't believe they're all gone. Like whole civilization is gone. I couldn't grasp that as a kid.
Well,
that's crazy.
We will learn what those civilizations were like.
Yeah, pretty much.
In 2019, how many years later? You do the math. You do it.
27.
27 years, damn.
37 years later.
We'll learn what the civilizations are like in Netflix's The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. We're going to talk right now about Netflix's Age of Resistance.
Yes.
So it turns out actually between 2005 and 2012 that there was this constant, are they, will they, won't they make a sequel to The Dark Crystal? They never made the movie. However, the collection, the material that they would develop actually ended up becoming a graphic novel for The Dark Crystal, which was a sequel. I don't know if it's necessarily, well, it's official, but like it's,
they released that somewhat recently.
I think it was released around 2013, 2014.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
But yeah, so that's what ended up happening. Then it was at last year's Comic-Con where me and Eddie find out that it's just like, oh, they've developed an actual TV show. It's called The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. And we were just like, what? We thought we would see a preview of it because we were at the Netflix panel last year in New York City Comic-Con. But it was just Lisa Henson on stage talking about the process of making this show. And they showed us like a trailer. And I was interested, but I wasn't sold on the idea because, first of all, fuck the Dark Crystal. I'm just like, that show was scary. That movie was scary. I don't want to see this as a TV show. But I was kind of, she caught my attention because if you've been listening to the podcast long enough, you know my biggest gripe I have with movies nowadays is the over-reliance on CGI.
Yes.
She made it a point to say, it's just like, we're going back to the art form of puppetry. We're only using CGI to either do effects that we can't achieve with puppetry or to clean up the puppetry.
Yeah.
I'm saying puppetry a lot, but it's important here.
Muppetry.
Love it.
Yeah.
So she was on record on saying that. When they sort of showed us a trailer, I was just like, oh, this, it looks good on camera. And flash forward to almost a year later. Damn, almost, Netflix. Yeah. Way to hold on.
Long time.
Hold on to that property. We get The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Yeah, this just came out August 30th. It was released.
August 30th?
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't that long ago.
It was not. Less than a month ago.
Much longer ago.
From when this podcast is released, guys. It was less than a month ago. This came out for us, for future listeners.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sure. We do release best ofs. This could be a best of. We don't know.
Yeah. And actually, go back, guys. We did a whole mini-sode on this. We ended one of our episodes talking about it. I don't know if we did a whole mini-sode, but in one of our episodes, we talk about The Dark Crystal. Maybe I'll insert a little excerpt of it here.
Okay. Netflix is releasing a 10-episode series based on the movie from the 80s, The Dark Crystal.
Oh my God.
Which one's The Dark Crystal?
The most memorable characters would be the weird lizard creatures and the one guy who always went,
No.
You remember him?
No.
So I'm a huge Jim Henson fan, but I'm like a Jim Henson Muppets and Sesame Street fan. So I didn't watch this film until I was an adult. And when I watched it, I was really high. I think I ate an edible. And it actually really disturbed me. Especially because of the character that the whole time went, who I do really good impersonation of, by the way. Look it up on YouTube.
I gotta check it
out. So I'm interested to see how they'll redo this. I think what works about it is like the 80s puppetry. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that by today's standard, it's dated. But like, I don't want to see it all CGI'd. I loved the fact that it was like pure Jim Henson in the lab created.
Mm. Hopefully this is like one of the, you know how we complain about Beauty and the Beast, the use of just full CGI.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of those things where like, I agree with you. I think if you bring out some puppetry and just like you're cleaning it up a little bit with CGI.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So that was us talking about The Dark Crystal.
If you could find
so
it.
We were anticipating this for it. A year. Yeah. Eddie came to us with this news because Eddie was also at Comic-Con with you and he was highly excited for this, weren't you?
I was very excited. And right now it's filling the Game of Thrones hole that I have in my heart.
Aww.
The comparisons are very important for this show because I think if anything, the most mature thing that comes out of this retelling of the Dark Crystal mythos,
mm-hmm.
is how storytelling has matured.
Yeah.
Right? And this is the prime example of it.
Yes. For sure. So did you guys finish it?
We finished it.
I finished it too.
Yeah. This is rare for you.
This is rare for me.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us right now, initially, what are your first thoughts?
My first thoughts were like, do I really want to embark on this?
Oh, those were my thoughts going. I was right, putting like, it offside.
Yeah, pressing like, it on play, tea. Episode yeah, one. Yeah. Essentially, that was me too. And then by the end of episode one, I'm like, I think I could do another one. And then at the end of episode two, I was like, I'm definitely watching the next one. And I watched the rest of the show in one day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I loved it.
It's a good show.
It was very good.
I'm so surprised how much I enjoyed it.
Yes, that's what it is. I loved it because it was a complete surprise for me of how much I enjoyed it and how well told it was. And I actually got a little emotional because I'm like, oh my God, if Jim Henson was alive, he'd be so proud.
Yeah. He would be. He would be very proud of his daughter.
So proud. Yeah. He would just be so proud of this. I think this is one of the best continuations of anything of his without his hand in it because they've ruined a lot of Muppets shit. Within a long time since his death in 1990.
Oh, do tell. What do you think they ruined?
Okay, so the first revival of the Muppets with the Jason Segel movie was good, but then the second film and then the TV show was crap.
What? The show Muppets Tonight?
No, just the Muppets. It was like an office kind of thing.
I thought that was the one that they're doing now.
No, there was another show. It went quickly off the air because it was absolute crap.
Oh. That's what Kermit had the other pig.
Yes.
The younger pig.
Yeah, terrible. Absolutely Slutty terrible. Pigs, not even the Muppets. I don't even consider that part of the canon.
You can't do
I consider
that.
It a disgrace.
It's part of the canon.
It's not.
It is. Jim Henson would be proud.
No, he wouldn't. Don't talk like that. But I really hated it. So anyway, I digress. He would have been really proud. And also, he would have seen, you know, like, in a weird way, now, you know, the Dark Crystal is kind of having this light shine back on it. So people are now watching the film again because it's also on Netflix.
And being disappointed.
Shut the fuck up. But his whole story that he came up with one night, Snowden and possibly Newark, is now being appreciated on a different level. Mm. And that's pretty fucking cool is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and he came up with a pretty cool world. And the world of the Dark Crystal with J.J. Llewellyn and Brian Froud and all these other people who had a hand in it came up with a really cool world. It's interesting. I digged it. So tell us about this world, Rolando.
Okay, so right now we don't actually know where. They actually never...
another time,
the creators
another place.
Never gave us... We know we're in the Age of Resistance.
Yeah.
But the creators actually never gave us a timeline as to like how far off
ahead.
We are. Yeah, like, well, yeah, how far behind, I guess,
oh,
we are from
yeah.
the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
Right? We know from what we know from the movie that Dark Crystal... When the Dark Crystal takes place, the Gelfling have all been wiped out.
Yes.
Where we are in this series, the Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, all the Gelfling are this like vast civilization.
Yes.
So it could be easily 100 years. I don't know how long it takes to genocide.
They did say 1,000 trine, though, that the Skeksis have ruled.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first convergence. That's when the Skeksis and the Urskex. Well, that's when the Urskex became the Skeksis and the Mystics in the first convergence. No, second convergence. The first convergence is when the Urskex and the Urskex got split.
Mm-hmm.
The second convergence is the war. I don't know. It's a complicated mythology that they
have.
It
is, yeah.
And there's one episode here where they try to like explain it all, and it got more confusing, I think.
A little bit.
Just a little.
It's just hard to remember when they got split up. And then but how long
you're right. But the Skeksis have been ruling for a thousand years. Although 1,000 years is like 1,000 years, I think, is just like a number that gets thrown around. I don't think it's exactly 1,000 years because I think one of the interesting things about this show is how the Skeksis, since they're the ones in power, they also are very, very weary of sharing knowledge, right?
They are.
So a lot of the stuff that like the Gelfling believe is all stuff that they have either heard from the Skeksis or just like kind of lore.
Yes.
Right? The Skeksis, for the most part,
like whispers. Yeah.
Yes, uneducated for the most part, because no one reads. In fact, the only one that reads is Thera. Thena? I forgot everyone's name right now. Thera.
Of the Skeksis?
No, of the girl, of the Gelfling.
Brea,
thank you. Brea.
She's a princess of the Vapra Gelfling.
Yes. Oh, look at you. You know the mythology already.
Yeah.
I can only describe them. The blondes. Scandinavian.
the winter people. The winter Gelfling.
Yeah, the Winterfell. Thank you.
Yeah, the Winterfell.
Let's just go right into Game of Thrones. yeah.
Yeah. Well, this film also... I'm sorry, continue.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say...
TV show.
This Netflix series also focuses more on the Skeksis' obsession with immortality. So we know why they're so obsessed with holding the Dark Crystal hostage.
Yes, right? Where in the Dark Crystal, I think the Skeksis were kind of one note.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
They were just like gross creatures who were in control that needed to be removed of their power.
Here we see the horrific nature still.
Yeah.
But we also they develop more so what drives their needs. It's fear. They're afraid of death. Their devious ways is all a manifestation from their fear of death.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of this, I mean, it's gross because it's so gross, and like they are at the end of the day evil, and we know what they're going to commit in the future.
Yes.
So we know they're just like absolutely pure evil.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the show really did a good job of kind of not just making some one note by introducing this whole fear, the emperor specifically, his absolute fear of death.
But they're also like, they're like afraid. Like when Agra comes and just like starts throwing water at them in the bathtub, they're like, ah, don't throw water at me, you know?
When she puts the eyeball instead of in the water,
she's like, oh my god! Good scene.
But yeah, I think we're getting into the weeds of it. So let's talk a little bit more about the show as a whole.
Yes, sorry.
Right. So let's talk a little bit. You're better with names and stuff. Tell me some of the cast members in this.
So this show pretty much focuses on three Gelfling who are very important within the Resistance. And as what you should know is that in the beginning they tell you that when the Gelfling were a race, there were 7 clans of Gelfling. But we really only need to focus on 3 of them. The Vapra clan, who have a princess named Brea, who's very knowledgeable and is out to seek the truth, whatever it is.
Her mother.
And her mother, who is here we go.
All Madra.
Yeah, and Madras are pretty much, it's a matriarchal society within the Gelflings.
Uh-huh.
So every single clan of Gelflings has a Madra. And then the one that rules over all of them is the All Madra.
Yes.
So, okay. So then there's a Stone in the Wood clan, and that's Rhiann, and he is a castle guard who witnesses the draining of his girlfriend, essentially, by the Skeksis. And then they see him there, and then he escapes. And then he's the one who's like, guys, Skeksis are assholes, and they're draining us.
And he's played by Taron Egerton.
Yes, who played Elton John.
Yes.
The Skeksis spread the lie that I am sick to ensure the truth dies with me. The truth about your brother. And what happened to Mira.
And then there is a breed of Gelfling who live in the ground.
The Grotten.
The Grotten. And there is my favorite, Deet, who is told by the Sanctuary Tree that there is a darkening that is spreading across Thra that needs to be stopped, and you must go to the Madra and you must go out and stop it.
Yeah, at this point, I think it's a good point to spoiler alert for anyone who has not seen the whole series, because we probably will spoil the shit out of it.
We are spoiling it.
Oh, but the interesting thing about her is that she has two dads.
And she does have two dads. Yeah. Yeah, we noticed that when I watched
homosexuality
it,
has shown up in the world of Crystal. I thought Bria's sisters, I was getting lesbian vibes.
Yeah, I thought one of them was. Yeah, it was either Celadon.
No, that's
Celadon. Or the other one. But there Celadon was this moment.
Celadon was the one who committed war crimes.
But I was also, yes.
That's Celadon.
Yeah, she was great. But I thought that I was hoping Bria. Because obviously Deet and Rhianne are going to fall in love or something, but I was hoping Brea was going to be gay. But then that one guy came from the other, like, Gelfin clan, and she clearly wanted to fuck him, so she's probably not.
Do Muppets fuck?
Well, I guess they do. It's implying that Jen and Kira are going to repopulate the Gelfling race, but... Yeah.
So Our Muppet fantasies aside, let's talk about the Skeksis. Let's talk about the Skeksis voice acting, because the Skeksis voice acting is by far
the best.
So good.
You say that Gelfing stole the vial.
It was all the Chamberlain's fault.
No, why am I not surprised?
We must make a bloody example of this treacherous Gelfling.
Scientist speaks true. Chamberlain is to blame.
I knew it. I knew it.
We have some prolific people here. We have Mark Hamill as the scientist.
Yes.
We have
Keegan-Michael Key.
Yes. He's
Keegan-Michael Key.
The ritual master, I think. Harvey Fierstein is one of them.
Harvey Fierstein is one of them.
Awkwafina is one of them. Yes. Jason Isaacs is the emperor.
Yes, he's a bad guy.
Who's also Lucius Malfoy. And Simon Pegg is Chamberlain.
Yes. Ooh,
and he does so good.
So good.
So good.
So good.
Honestly,
give him every Emmy you can. Like, he wowed me so much. I was just like, I was enamored with this performance.
Yeah,
and it's really mind good. You, it's a fucking puppy. But the voice acting was so good. It just brings that character to
life. Well, yeah. Well, also, I don't know if you know this, but what they did was that all of the people who did the puppets performed on stage, and then they brought the footage to the actors and they had to match them.
Oh.
And that's how they all performed.
The puppets.
The voice acting, at least.
Wait, the actors were on stage?
No, the actors were not on stage. The puppeteers, or the Muppeteers, they performed the characters. So that's why when you watch the credits too, everyone gets two people credited.
Yeah.
And then that footage is brought to the actors in like an ADR room, and they have their headphones on, and they match their performance to what the puppeteer did.
All right, I didn't know that.
So it's a marriage of
performances. Did someone watch after the after show, the making of?
I watched a little bit of it, yeah. Because I'm also so fascinated. I've been fascinated since I was a wee bit obsessed with Jim Henson as to how he creates what he creates, you know? So, but, you know, it was interesting because it's 10 episodes long, 50 minutes about. And when I was watching it, I was like, please let this be it and not a second season. But then towards the end of it, and especially last episode, you know that you're getting another season.
You don't want a second season?
And then by the end of it, I wanted a second season. Oh. And what's incredible is that the story, there's still things that need to be told.
Yes. Oh, so, I mean, they did a good job setting up things, storylines for a second season.
Yes. It was watching this, too, that when you go back and you watch The Dark Crystal, you realize how many things that were left unanswered that this show really does help you now put into perspective. Yeah. So that was interesting, too, because I'm like, wow, I didn't understand like how much this is actually helping The Dark Crystal.
I don't think it helped it.
You don't think it helped it?
I actually, I was more excited to like kind of like, okay, cool, I'm going to rewatch. I'm going to revisit this world now. Kind of knowing some of this backstory, because keep in mind, I've forgotten so much of the Dark Crystal. For example, I forgot Podlings were a thing.
Yeah.
Right? Hup. So Hup was great.
Hup's my favorite, other than Deet.
That was amazing. Thank you.
So as I'm rewatching it, I'm just like, oh God, I'm so fucking bored. It's the storytelling. The storytelling is just so different.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, season one of the Age of Resistance has a narrator. How long do we have the narrator for? Like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Played by Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
And the other one, I think that the first 15 minutes were all narration.
Hmm.
An internal monologue, like for the rest of the movie.
So you just think that the filmmaking that the filmmaking in Age of Resistance is better. Therefore, it makes the filmmaking in
the storytelling. And that, I'm not faulting the film. No, because
the storytelling in 82 looked bad.
The storytelling in the 80s one is what I think. Blah. Mm. Here in the Age of Resistance social storytelling, I mean, obviously, you know, comparing an 80s storytelling to like now. Very different sorts.
Well, also, we are now in this generation where we want things to be expanded upon. You know, we have things like Netflix, where we can easily binge a TV show and watch stuff like this. Now we're also the age of television where we want our characters to be expanded upon in television shows where movies aren't quite enough for us.
Yeah.
So it's also interesting, too, because our era is also very much reflected in this. Mistrust of power. Ideologies that I feel like are very 2019 and kind of, let's say, Trump era, are reflected in Age of Resistance, which is interesting, too, because, I mean, it was the beginning of the Reagan era, so you don't really get much there, but, like, the Dark Crystal doesn't really have, to my knowledge, a person who did not grow up in that time period, this idea of, like, oh, this is so, like, 80s political.
Yeah, this one, you're right. I agree with you. This one, I mean, you could argue this is an allegory of, I think it's actually about global warming.
A lot of people think that. I've read that.
It's it's like the, if you think about it, right? It's about climate change.
The darkening is,
So, and then you have obviously the Skeksis who are well aware of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They don't care.
They don't care.
They're raping the planet for what it's worth. And I mean, those aren't. You could argue, are those Republicans? Are those oil tycoons? It's whatever your heart wants it to be. You know?
Yeah. But it's also mistrust of power, blind faith in power, you know, not being able to think for yourself and being able to, like, read and
just for sure. Look, I mean, you could think of an allegory for just, you know, Catholicism as, like, a religion. Or any religion, actually, you could say.
Maybe not that
just,
too.
Maybe not the Catholicism.
Yeah, maybe I'm going more of a Marxist thing where I'm just like, power, anyone in power, be wary of.
Yeah. No, you could read this in many, many different ways. And I think that's what makes it kind of exciting.
Yeah. Watching it. There's definitely like a lot of
I mean, even if you don't want to read that much into this, it's still just spectacular storytelling. I think maybe for me, and one of the reasons I enjoyed this show so much was because anyone who was a fan of Game of Thrones knows the common complaint is that the last season was doo-doo.
Yeah.
All right. Watching this one, I'm amazed at like everything that the first few seasons of Game of Thrones does right, they're able to do in one season in which the characters that you're introduced, I mean, you're watching a kid's show. I'm not expecting puppets to die.
Do you think it's a kid's show?
Lisa Henson has said this is a family show. She has been on record as saying, and despite the fact that she said it's like, despite the fact that when we're filming it, we kept saying, this isn't the Light Crystal we're making.
Well, standards for family things have changed drastically.
This is a weird standard. I don't think watching puppets die. Yeah. Every episode, I think a new puppet
died. The fucking poor Grunex at the end, the way they got murdered, and then that's how Garth them are born. Devastated me. I was so, that scene really made me actually want to cry.
No. So many people died in this show. I could not. I was a little flabbergasted.
Yeah.
At the deaths. Oh my god! All right. I think the most unexpected death was the queen, the Almadra. When the Skeksis just straight up just murders her in cold blood.
Yeah.
And then her daughter Celadon is just like, you know, I still believe in you. You are our Lord. You are our Savior. Just like, yo, girl.
I was. Are you fucking kidding me? But
I mean, sometimes also the lighting was so spectacular where like you just see like their eyes have more life than Camila Cabello's relationship with Shawn Mendes. I don't know. I had to set up a joke there. I don't know. Yeah. But you know what I mean? There's no passion there. The puppets had passion in their eyes.
For sure.
That's what I'm saying.
And also, yeah, it's just like, did you see the setup that they have for the next season too within Dietz kind of looking to the future?
Yeah. And I mean, they also even like kind of foreshadowed the future of the movie.
Yeah.
I really, to be honest, at the end of the season, I really hope that the final season of the show, whenever it may be, is just the movie expanded upon. I would think that's so wonderful if they just like, not necessarily erase her father's legacy, but like kind of improve upon it.
So you think it needs improving? You think that no matter if, even if it was flawed, it should be touched?
Hell yes.
Because
they did such a wonderful job here that I'm just like, yes, I want to see now you guys tackle the source material.
Oh, I don't know, but I'm kind of against that. It's just kind of like, oh, you know, there were issues with Monet's original lily pads painting, so we're gonna fix it. It's like,
actually, we don't have to fix that, but we fix upon the technique, do we not?
I still think that the Dark Crystal in its own way is art, and it should be left alone.
It could be left alone. I'm saying
you, but you said improve it.
Yeah, I think because I find the original one so fucking boring.
That's a personal opinion, sir.
It is. You're right. It is a personal opinion, but I think people are right now who are enamored with a TV show are lying to themselves and kind of in love with the fantasy of kind of being afraid of kind of this weird world that was created, right? Yeah. And if they really sat down and rewatched this movie, they would realize this movie is fucking boring. It, from a visual point of view, like, not beautiful. Beautiful is the wrong word. Ambitious, I think you've said before.
Yes, but ambitious. Like,
it's weird.
I think there's a lot of beauty in the design of this film.
No, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think my beef with it is just like from a storytelling point of view, it's weak. And I think we need to accept that the original story is just a weak script.
So then I guess you kind of answered the question, did we need this?
Yes.
You think so?
I didn't think we needed this, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, when me and Eddie were at Comic-Con, I think my reaction is like, oh, this is really happening?
Gross. Is there even an audience for this?
I'm surprised how many of my friends love The Dark Crystal.
I'm surprised how many people have been talking to you about it and are aware of it and are going to watch it.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was needed until I watched it and I realized that, like, oh, you know what? They nailed it. This is what good storytelling is. And the reason I keep saying storytelling is because, like, visuals aside, filmmaking techniques aside, the story is so well told, right? I think that's what this is that really moved me.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, this is telling, it's a myth, right? It's like, yeah. Again, we're following that, the monolithic character story arc.
Mm-hmm.
Again, but they were able to just, they were just able to surprise me in every episode. You know, people die.
Yeah.
Which is something that you just don't expect with children's television.
Yeah.
And I think it's
family television. It's slightly different.
TV PG, I think, is what it's like.
And definitely there are some serious adult themes.
Serious adult themes, yeah.
It's so interesting, right? Because, like, I don't know why I have, like, this automatic rejection that's just instinctual with me to, like, reject, like, children and family programming.
Okay.
Despite the fact that I should know better, because, like, children and families programming is what gave us the legend of Korra, Avatar. Even the new modern in the Netflix new version of Voltron, the Dragon Prince, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the good writers have figured out that kids are no dummies and they are okay absorbing this kind of themes.
Yeah.
That could be, you know, and Jim Henson was right. Like, making a movie that scares kids isn't bad, where it's just like, you took me to this world that Jim Henson created. And you expanded upon it in all the right ways.
I would agree with you, except for the whole boring thing. I don't think that the film is necessarily boring. I think that Jim Henson made a film that had bad timing in his life, in the sense where he had a great concept, but 1982 was just not the era for him to tell it. And therefore, he had a lot of constrictions on him. He had, like, studio expectations, lack of creative freedom, and just, you know, like, a chosen medium that made it so that his story did not get conveyed well. And that this was needed in the sense that it needed to serve his original film.
Huh.
And it needed for us to relook at it, because actually relooking at this film, I appreciated it way more than I did the first time. And even though I do think that it's kind of lacking and there's a lot of plot holes and stuff, I wasn't necessarily bored. I did realize it moved at a slow pace.
So slow.
But I looked at it and I was like, you know, here is something that was definitely a passion project, but that I feel like just had so many constrictions upon it for not even, like, things that were obvious, but things that just, like, the era he was born in and all this stuff. And watching this now, I get a little sentimental too, because I'm like, he'd be so proud and he'd be so happy that now his story can actually be told or at least expanded upon and have its new life.
Interesting.
And people are actually more receptive of it, because now I think the Dark Crystal is going to have one hell of a comeback.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Mm-hmm. I think.
And his legacy, too.
Disney's, like, kind of going to try to buy up this property so that way they can make a whole theme park around Thra. in the animal.
God, I would so go there.
They did it with fucking.
They did it with Avatar,
which is like.
Do people care about that fucking movie?
I don't care about that. Do not.
What the hell?
I'm not going to go to Animal. Apparently, it's like one of the busiest rides in all of Disney World. I would not.
It's just because it's new.
You couldn't pay me to go to Pandora.
Is that what it's called?
Pandora's
so stupid. I saw Avatar once and I hated every second.
Oh, thank you.
That.
Me too.
It was terrible.
Me too.
If your favorite movie is Avatar, I judge you.
Die. So Eddie, what were your thoughts on The Dark Crystal?
I was definitely fascinated. I loved it, period. I love the story, characters. I also was very fascinated with the expansion of this mythology.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know how it got really fleshed out, and it's funny because when I was partially watching The Dark Crystal with you, it made it even more sad on how desolate the world had become without the Gelflings.
Yeah,
and just like all that great loss.
Yeah,
you know, was weighed because the Age of Resistance is just so full of life.
Yeah.
Even down to the little critters that you see in the corners, always like running around in the forest.
True.
Oh,
I didn't. You're right. There was like a lot.
So there was always that little thing. There's a little detail in life in thought.
Mm-hmm.
What I found interesting is having kind of a clearer origin of who I'm going to say that I'm not going to mess up the
Agra.
No.
Oh, the Urskeks.
And you know when they were divided.
Yeah, the Skeksis and the Mystics were the Urskeks.
Because it was specified that they were aliens that came to this world.
Mm-hmm.
They're not from there.
Yes.
So they're not connected to the life there.
Mm.
And their presence when they divided is a perversion of the life of that world. And I didn't understand why Agra gave up the protection of the crystal.
Agra did many things.
Did she know that?
Huh?
Did she know that they were two separate alien beings that got separated? Like, was Agra aware of all of that?
No, I think she was aware that when they came in their original form, they came in their form, and that they made that, what is
the
it?
The observatory?
The orrery.
Whatever. It's an observatory.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like what she can use to travel the universe.
Yes.
You know, mentally. So she says, oh, I'm taking a vacation. I'm taking a sabbatical.
Yeah,
take care of the crystal.
Yeah.
And then this was the result of that. So even like a lot of what took place was kind of like her fault in some ways.
Oh, no. Let's be real. Agra was a terrible character.
I love Agra.
Hang on. I like her character. Oh, wait. Maybe Agra is a terrible person.
Stop it.
Person. No, she is.
No,
she
she's
is
not.
Literally responsible for like the future genocide of all the Gelflings.
Do we know what Agra was born of? Agra was born of Thra itself, right? So she was
and
born
she
from
abandoned
the trees. She's nature incarnate. She doesn't know any better.
She should know better.
She's the mother of the planet.
Oh, my God. So by this,
she's all knowing of Thra, but she doesn't know anything about these alien beings.
Okay.
How could she not know?
So if we take this, whole idea that that Dark Crystal Age of Resistance is a allegory for global change, are you saying that you're saying Mother Nature is responsible for man's destruction of the world,
or Mother Nature?
She done goofed.
Yeah, untrusting.
Yeah, Mother Nature trusted us, and we fucked her.
Interesting.
Right. And that's Agra for you. And Agra is great. I'm sorry.
No,
love
I like
that.
Agra.
I love that little curmudgeon.
She's not little.
She's pretty small.
She's like, I was just born, but I'm still old.
Should we do a lightning round?
Let's do a lightning round.
Pew, lightning round.
The Skeksis in the original film compared to the Skeksis in Age of Resistance.
Are we comparing all of them?
Yeah, and then we'll do Chamberlain separate.
Okay, I actually like the Emperor in the original film over the Emperor in the TV show.
Because he dies?
Well, not just because he dies, but like his death was so funny to me. He's just like in denial that he's going to die. And I feel like that's how I'm going to go. Just in denial that I'm going to go. I could be getting murdered. I'm going to be like, you're killing the... No, I'm not going to die.
So it's just all about you.
I'm immortal. And then die.
Remember in the Age of Resistance where they're trying to drain Agra and she's like, you're dust. And he's like, I'm not dust. And that's exactly how he died, was turning to dust. It was fitting.
Obviously, I think the Emperor from the TV show is a much better developed character.
Of course.
But like, I mean, come on. It was just so funny to see like this like corpse, like just like, ah!
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still Emperor. Ah!
Yeah.
Literally, I think that's verbatim.
That was great. That was great. Yeah, that was great. Visual effects too. What about Chamberlain?
Oh, no, come on. Simon Pegg's performance as Chamberlain.
No, I would have to go with the original because Simon Pegg's brilliant impersonation wouldn't be without the original Chamberlain, who set up the
his...
Whoever came up with the
this is true.
Fucking genius.
This is fair. This is fair. I think maybe I'm going not necessarily just from the performance. I think I'm going from the characterization.
Yeah, he brought Chamberlain to a new level, but at the end of the day, the person who originated Chamberlain is what brought Chamberlain to life.
Let's just agree. Chamberlain is the best Gexies of all.
Chamberlain's the freaking best.
Please.
Just like prophecy. No,
so
true.
If we're talking about Game of Thrones here, he becomes the Littlefinger.
The Littlefinger. He plays both sides.
He's playing both. He's like he's in it for himself.
He's chaotic neutral.
Yeah.
Okay. So for Gelfling, we're going to have to do, I guess, maybe Jen versus Rhiann, who might be his father.
I don't think so. You think so? Maybe. That's interesting. I might go with, I actually don't like either of the two.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, it's so funny. I haven't seen Taron Egerton as Rocket Man.
Uh-huh.
Elton John.
But you don't like him?
No. I actually don't know much. I haven't seen much with Taron Egerton. He's a handsome guy, but I don't know much of his work. He was the weakest link in the whole show.
You thought so?
I thought so.
There was a couple times where his voice acting was a bit like, oh, like that's quite a journey. Like the way he would talk, I was like, why are you saying it like that?
Well, he has an accent naturally.
It was even like his delivery. It wasn't just his accent. I was doing a terrible impersonation of him. What about, so Deet and Brea versus Kira.
Wait.
In the lightning round.
Okay, so it's Deet versus Brea.
No, Deet and Brea versus Kira, since there's only one girl, but there's two girls in the new one. We got so many women in this movie. That was my favorite part.
I actually appreciate that too. Do you think
so much women?
Do you think? I mean, I know they did it intentionally, right? It's just like
kind of, but it was also something that Henson very much came up with in The Dark Crystal, where he's like, Augur needs to be a woman. You know, the person who looks after this planet is a woman.
Yeah, but
like the people who are bringing chaos to it were men.
But she's not the one who has the balance.
No, she's not. But she's still the mother of
the planet.
Dark Crystal
was like kind of useless.
It doesn't matter. She was still the mother of the planet. The planet could be useless still.
Yeah. Good question. I don't know. I don't like Kira. She's a little too passive in this overall.
She saved the animals from the scientist.
What emerald?
The animals from the scientists where her essence was being drained. She was able to escape being drained.
By Siggy also. That was like such... I really don't like the original movie at all.
Fine.
No, I think Deet... Oh, so my competition is between Deet and Brea. I think I lean more towards Brea.
Really? Why is that?
Learned a little more... Her family drama was more interesting, right?
Those sisters are great.
I mean, the sisters, yeah. And I can relate. I have a very terse relationship with my sister, so I get it.
I love how much you're projecting your own life into why you like these characters. Yeah. This is so not biased for you, even though I have the bias of being a Jim Henson fan.
What about you?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to pick. I guess, I just like the character of Deet. She's such a tragedy because she's so pure and she's so well-intentioned, and now she's going to be completely ruined by the Darkening and might become the villain of the series. I liked her relationship with Hup, who's my favorite, too.
Oh, yeah, Hup.
And I loved him.
Crush on her.
Yeah.
That's cute.
But I feel like out of all of them, the one that I resonate with the most is Brea. Just like my quest for knowledge.
And yeah.
Being like the youngest out of a bunch of sisters and just being the best one. So
now who's projected?
But I don't know who else we can lightning round this with.
I don't think there's actually any. Oh, Agra.
Agra. She's way better in the new one. Because she's
she is way better in the new
one. You get more of a sense of why she exists.
Yeah, in the original movie, when they go visit her, right? She's just like, pick the crystal. Yeah. It's one of
you
these.
Want a crystal? Here, pick it.
It's just like, all right, this isn't really much of a fun quest, is it?
Yeah. Well, poor Jen is just thrown to the fucking wolves by the dying mystic who's like, I should have told you this years ago.
It's true.
Like, okay, cool. Yeah, he could have done
Instead
a lot
of, like,
more.
Training to fight, he's learning how to play the flute by the river naked. Priorities,
being a
whore
girlfriend.
Like, the mystics know at a certain point the convergence is going to happen, so they're just waiting. They intentionally waited.
Yeah.
What's the other thing? So I think overall, I guess we could say that we enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite scenes was mm-hmm. this is great scene where Lena Headey's character is kind of playing opposite to Celadon, who becomes a Cersei-like character. And they even have the scene where like she's dressing up in all black too, which is a great, I think it's a nod to Lena Headey's Cersei character. So, yeah. I mean, the nods to Game of Thrones overall were just everywhere. I mean, the Seven Kingdoms, Seven Clans, like yeah. it was, it's good. It's fun. It is Game of Thrones for kids.
Yeah. Even though the opening, the moment it began, I'm like, oh, this is so Fellowship of the Ring opening, right. But that's the thing.
And we know that this, I don't know if it was derivative of it, but it does again, but that story itself is it is a very common story arc.
True. Well, we're also in a day and age too where we like to homage things and we like to make it obvious that hey, these are the things that influenced us, you know, mm-hmm. like we don't hide from it anymore. Now actually we applaud that. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of references. You know, my girlfriend picked up on a Xena reference. So there's tons of them. So did you watch The Dark Crystal? Do you like The Dark Crystal? You gotta let us know.
Do you agree with me? Does The Dark Crystal suck? I really want to know from you guys.
Can you stop?
All right.
After all of that, we could agree that this was great. So do you agree with me that does The Dark Crystal suck? Like, come on.
Because I'm trying to incite the people. I want them to rise up and accept the fact that, like, The Dark Crystal is not as good as people remembered it to be.
Yeah, Age of Resistance against Rolando's bullshit, guys.
But where can people let us know?
You could hit us up on Instagram. We are at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Hit us up at Facebook. Facebook.com/remakes, reboots, revivals, or send us a lovely, really long email, remakes, reboots, revivals@gmail.com.
And, you know, if we like it, we might read it on the air.
Can I hear your Chamberlain? Please.
all right. Skeksis, your friend.
That's pretty good.
I'm definitely gonna use his voice on my Game of Thrones characters.
Yes, or when you play Dungeons and Dragons, definitely have someone.
Oh, did I say Game of Thrones? Dungeons and Dragons.
There you go.
Oh,
yeah.
It's too much medieval mythology around here. I can't keep them all straight.
Alrighty. Well, on that note, let's say goodbye. Stay original.